My husband and I met in a Latin classroom in high school when we were 15. So you could imagine we had a lot of time to plan our wedding. But we didn't. I don't know. Something about our personalities. We didn't think a lot about what that day might look like. And the logistics of getting our families together was overwhelming. So we certainly wanted to be married, but we didn't spend a lot of time thinking about our actual wedding. So it was a small blessing to us that a worldwide pandemic broke out 2 months after we got engaged, because it meant that maybe our wedding could be smaller and simpler. Or so I thought, at least. Actually, our first plan was to elope because it was COVID, and because between the two of us, we had like $80. And I found this service in Alaska that would fly you and your priest onto an iceberg, and you could get married on an iceberg. I thought that was kind of cool. So if anyone wants to do that, I'm happy to be your priest, okay? So call me up. So we took this elopement plan to our families and said, this is what we want to do, you know, because of COVID and we have no money for a big wedding and this iceberg thing is really cool. But our families were having none of it, none of it. For some reason, they wanted, or it kind of seemed like they needed, our wedding to be the celebration of love. They needed to be there to celebrate Christian and I, who they had seen grow from stupid teenagers into adults ready to get married. Okay, but then I was stressed. How were we going to pull this off, okay? We had, again, as I mentioned, $80, and it was COVID. How were we going to plan a big wedding that our parents wanted? And then this is true. The most amazing thing started to happen. All of our family and friends started to offer what they could to make our wedding a special day. It wasn't one of those big magazine weddings, but it was perfect for us. So my friend Cormac sang music at the church that I will remember until the day that I die. Our in-laws sacrificed the grass in their backyard so we could have a party in a tent outside to follow COVID restrictions. One of my old youth group leaders catered up a storm and we had a feast. Christian used to be a brewer, so his brewery friends hooked him up with beer for the reception. Our groomsmen made goodie bags for all the people at the church who came to the ceremony but couldn't go to the reception. Our friend Emma made a cake. I could go on and on and on. It was this outpouring of love and companionship and celebration of us. It was completely unexpected, and I will remember it until the day I die. It was this abundance that I didn't think we had and I didn't expect to have. And I tell this story today of unexpected abundance because while it was happening, I couldn't help but think about this story we heard in the gospel today, the wedding at Cana. I really did. I'm not just up here as a preacher trying to make connections. Like, I actually was thinking about the wedding at Cana the whole time we were getting married, because our wedding was just filled with mere mortals, and it was abundant in unexpected ways. The wedding at Cana had Jesus himself there to show God's reckless and lavish generosity. I wish I could have been at that wedding. And, like, the wedding at Cana, this is the miracle, right? This is the one everyone knows, the one that is referenced in books and on TV and on TikTok, the miracle everyone knows and jokes about, turning water into wine. It's the miracle. And it's a great story, but I think sometimes we miss the point because it is so well known. And I want to dig more into what the wedding at Cana actually means to us today. But before I start, I also want to say, I'm going to talk a lot about wine right now. Wine is just a placeholder, okay? So if you are a person who does not like wine, this story is still for you. If you like juice or mint tea or eggnog or oat milk, whatever your celebratory drink of choice is, this is for you. It is not about wine being alcoholic. It is not about wine being made of grapes. It is about celebration. So, the wedding at Cana that Margie just read for us, it takes place very early in the Gospel of John, right after his baptism, or right after Jesus' baptism, and right after Jesus calls his first disciples. And I think it's very interesting that the first thing he does after he calls his disciples is go to a wedding. I love that. I love that's the first thing on Jesus' to-do list. He's gathered his disciples, he's starting a new ministry, and he wants to go to a party. And these guys, these disciples, are normal men. They don't have any formal training. They don't understand the mission or what is about to happen to them. You would think Jesus might want to pray with them or tell them about what's going to happen or take them to a mountain. Jesus loved going to mountains with people. No, he takes them to a party. He takes them to a wedding. And they drink and they celebrate and they have fun. And in many ways, a wedding is kind of the opposite vibe of all of the heavenly things we have heard about in the Gospel of John so far. Weddings are filled with some of the most human things that we can do. We dress up in our best clothes, we sing, we dance, we joke, we laugh, we celebrate, we have fun together. And so I think it is a beautiful thing that the first thing Jesus does with his followers is to plunge into the fullness of humanity. And I don't know about you, but for me, I cannot imagine Jesus sitting there with a serious face, talking to just one or two people. I can't see him frowning or judging or complaining about the music being too loud. Instead, I see him as part of the celebration. I see him singing along with everyone else, rejoicing in the festivity, profoundly happy to celebrate with those that he loves. Excited to be surrounded by family and friends. Think of the best wedding you've been to, the happiest you've been at a wedding. That's how I like to picture Jesus in this story. Jesus is so beautifully human, and he is celebrating because a wedding is a celebration of love. And Jesus has come to reveal and strengthen and deepen love. And then they run out of wine. You've probably heard this before, but it was customary to serve the best wine first and then start serving the cheap stuff once everyone was drunk so they wouldn't notice the difference. So the family had even run out of the cheap stuff, and that would have been very embarrassing for them, for the host family. And that brings us to Mary in this story, and I love Mary's role in all of this because she is the one who comes to Jesus and says, "They have run out of wine." And Jesus kind of brushes her off. He says, "Oh, it's not my time yet. You know, don't ask this of me." But Mary knows that Jesus has a heart for all those who are struggling and human and need help. And she knows that he is present to the poorest and the weakest and the loneliest of those who are there. And she trusts that he will provide for them. And he does. So Jesus tells them to fill 6 giant jugs with water and bring them to the steward, or like the chief caterer, kind of. And imagine their surprise when they discover that it is wine. Imagine their surprise. It is an incredible amount of wine, and it is the good wine. It's hundreds of liters of wine. These jars were really big. They were used for ritual purification. 6 of them were filled. It was an abundance of excellent wine. And like I said, it could be wine, it could be mint tea, it could be oat milk, it could be eggnog, whatever you use to celebrate. It is an abundance of a reason to rejoice. And this story is a sign. It is a sign that the daily things that are around us constantly, like water and jars, and that the places that are routinely and fully human, like wedding feasts, and that the people, like the unnamed bride and groom, who probably weren't so special because history did not record their name, that all of the mundane, normal people and all of the mundane, normal things can and will be used for God's glory. Abundance is all around us through God. Water has been turned to wine. The messianic time has arrived. The wedding at Cana makes me think that Jesus was saying, "Come and see. You haven't seen anything yet. You think you've had the good wine, but what is going to come is going to blow your mind." The wedding of Cana shows how the needs of the world are in direct contrast with the reckless generosity of God. God surrounds us with more than we can ask or imagine. Abundance is all around us. We are the abundance. You are the abundance. But what would it look like if we lived as if we actually believed this were true? What would it look like if we lived as if we actually believed we were surrounded by abundance? Christian and I had a tiny taste of this overflowing abundance at our own wedding, but we still often find ourselves getting hung up on what we think we don't have. How do we balance the generosity of God, in which we have more and better than we could ask or imagine, with the messaging of our culture of scarcity, in which we can never have enough? And how do we find our place in this story? Are we meant to be the servants through which God's abundance flows? Or are we meant to be Mary, constantly bringing the needs of the world to God, trusting that God will provide? Are we able to look around and see the remarkable gifts and work of people in our community who are following their callings to do God's work right here and right now? How do we live into this promise? How do we remain faithful to Jesus Christ and live in hopeful expectation? How indeed. One theologian puts it this way: God is continually and unendingly pouring out love and light to us, stretching our being so that we can receive always more, infinitely more. Love is possible. In changing the water into wine, Jesus reveals that he wants to change the waters of our broken humanity into the joys of wine today. In order to be able to do this, Jesus needs our cooperation, just as he needed the faith, trust, and hard work of those servants who filled the 6 jars to the brim with water. He needs our trust and our belief. He needs us to retune ourselves to see the constant blessings all around us. The first thing Jesus did when he called his disciples was party at a wedding. The first miracle Jesus offered us was turning water into wine to show the generosity and blessings of God among us. God is found in community, just like this, when we are living our lives as fully and as humanly as possible. So again, I ask you, as we begin a new year together at St. George on Young, what would it look like if we actually lived like we believed this gospel was true? What would it look like if we looked around our community and saw the abundance of gifts that God has placed in each one of us to build the kingdom? What would it be like if we raised up the work that most of us are already doing in our lives and found a way to celebrate it as a church? Among us are artists and chefs and bakers and teachers and engineers and comedians and parents and children and builders and so many more. How can we celebrate and support you? How can you celebrate and support us? How can we learn from Jesus to stop looking around us to see scarcity, but to see the abundance poured out upon us? How can we follow the call to become overwhelmed by riches where we thought we only had dust? Together, this year, let us learn to expect unbelievable things from each other, and let the wonders pour forth through God. Amen.